The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight's show, we have Major League Baseball recap, NBA draft preview, the Vancouver Riots, the U.S. Open, remembering Ryan Dunn, the top movies at the box office over the weekend, and much, much more, only on Unsigned, happening now. Hey, everybody. How's it going? My name is Ryan. Welcome to Unsigned. It is Tuesday night. Hopefully everything is all right with you out there. A lot of things to cover tonight, as I said, top of the show. Lots of music, movie, sports, Ryan Dunn, NBA, Major League Baseball, U.S. Open wrapping up over the weekend. Father's Day being Sunday. Hopefully everyone had a pleasant Father's Day. You know who probably had a really awkward Father's Day was Arnold Schwarzenegger. Wouldn't you think? Mildred, come here. I was once the governor of California. I'm an action film star. I'm the governor. Mildred, meet Maria Schreiber. She used to clean our lamps. Remember her, Maria? Sorry. It had to be done. Happy Father's Day to everyone out there. Hopefully everybody had a good weekend. Jumping right into it tonight, I want to talk about the Vancouver Riots. You know, and I'm not a huge hockey fan. We don't cover hockey a whole lot on the show. We talked about it last week after Dale Ryder had left the show. Again, thanks for him for being on. You know, the Stanley Cup, Game 7 was last Wednesday night in Vancouver. Boston Bruins shut out the Vancouver Canucks at home on their home ice. Wasn't that exciting a Game 7 as far as NHL hockey is concerned. With that being said, congratulations to the Bruins. They take the cup home. Now you have your post-hockey fiasco. Now, many of you may recall, and maybe you don't recall, in 94, Vancouver had a similar scenario where they lost the cup and their fans rioted. Wasn't that much made of it because it wasn't that big of an ordeal. It was contained. Still disturbing, disgusting behavior. Now you look at what happened last Wednesday night in Vancouver. You have fans, you know, yeah, sure, they probably were drinking most of the day. It's hockey, it's Canada, it's a big deal, I understand that. But there comes a point where, you know, when you get into a situation, you're like, let's tip over cars and light dumpsters on fire and break buildings out of businesses in our beautiful city of Vancouver. I've never been to Vancouver. I've talked to people who have been there. I've talked to some of the music artists on Twitter who have been there. It's a beautiful city. For that to happen is disgusting. Now, I understand that this goes back to a couple of weeks ago when we had Daryl Ryder on the show. You know, just because you bought a ticket to an event, now obviously this happened outside of the arena, but just because you bought a ticket, it doesn't give you the unbridled passion or right to be an idiot. Now, these are people more than likely that did not fork over the $500, $600, $800 to be in the arena to see their beloved Vancouver Canucks get wiped all over the ice by the Boston Bruins. Now, I'm a Cleveland sports fan. We've suffered, you know, and again, it's a national punchline, of course. You know, Cleveland sports is, it's rough being a Cleveland sports fan. But I'll tell you what, if the city of Cleveland rioted every time there was a major loss, there wouldn't be a city of Cleveland. So if every sports fan goes out there and acts like this, there wouldn't be a city. You know, so not once do I ever remember being a fan, being so upset about a loss, whether it be the Browns, Cavs, Indians, Ohio State Buckeyes. I never remember going, you know what? Screw this. Let's go burn something. Let's go break some windows out. I am that mad. Never. Now, Michael Bublé, singer, songwriter, is leading the charge here, native of Vancouver, Canada, is reading the charge for this. If you have video, photos, those type of things, you know, hand them over so they can identify these idiots. They are idiots that did this. There's no and, if, or buts about it. And you know who also are bigger, almost as bigger idiots than the people who actually did the rioting and the looting and the fire setting and, you know, all the other things that go along with rioting. I don't know. I've never rioted. I don't know. I don't know what else goes and entails. Pillaging, burning, rah, 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 dancing on top of cop cars. I don't know. A lot of that was going on in the footage that I saw. Are the people who hung around with their camera phones in front of the burning cars and, you know, the people who have been trampled on by some of the police officers, you know, taking pictures. I got to get my Facebook profile updated. Look at this cool picture. I was there. Thumbs up, man. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Mike, what are your thoughts on the Vancouver riots, man?
I don't even know. I mean, obviously I'm against them 100%. I just like you, Ryan, Cleveland fan, you know, born in the area. The city would not be here today if we rioted every time there was a loss. I agree with you 100%. It's ridiculous. Although the whole social media and everyone with a camera phone is coming back to bite these fans, or should I say these rioters in the behind, because they're able to use this information now. So it's starting to pay off, people. You know, it's starting to pay off.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to escape Mark Zuckerberg, you know, for Facebook. I mean, and, you know, they're just not going to escape the guy. He's got you cornered now. You know, you have the authorities are using this now for other means. And in a situation like this, rightfully so, I think these people should, you know, I don't know if you throw them all in jail or not. I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to go. But I think, you know, paying for the damage is definitely one thing, maybe some community service. I don't think you necessarily throw them all in jail and label them as felons. But, you know, I think that, you know, depending on the damage they did, what evidence they have, I think they definitely should, you know, work on, you know, restoring what they damaged, paying for the losses out of their own pocket and doing some community service in homeless shelters or something like that. And that's just my opinion. But hopefully the people who caused it and initiated this thing can be wrangled in. And I'm sure the Vancouver police will do their best in that. Now, with that being said, I want to move on. Thursday night, the NBA draft is coming. The rumor mill is working overtime. Is Minnesota trading the second pick? This person's going here. That person's going there. The Chicago Bulls are doing this. Like I said, there's a lot of things that are being thrown about on all different types of sites. You know, whether it's Hoop, Pro Basketball, you know, draft.com, there's all kinds of things out there. Now, one thing I will say, usually when there's smoke, there's fire. Now, I remember in February when we talked about the trade deadline, usually this much talk, you know, usually there's not that many trades that happen. Then all of a sudden trade deadline came and there were 15 trades. I think with the potential lockout coming July the 1st for the NBA, you're going to see a lot more activity. I think it's going to be a very exciting night for the NBA draft. There's rumors that the Atlanta Hawks are in trades. Golden State has been rumored in trades, and then they've come out and said, no, that's not true. So it's interesting how these things get started. Now, one thing is for sure, the Cleveland Cavaliers really hold the power in this draft with the number one pick and the number four pick. They really do. Depending on what they do at number one, which they're going to pick Kyrie Irving. I think they'd be crazy not to. Yes, Derek Williams from Arizona is a great player, no doubt about it. When I saw him in the NCAA tournament, I was like, wow. And we talked about it on the show. If you can't stop Derek Williams on that Arizona team, you can't beat Arizona. They made it to the Elite Eight, and they look good doing it. That being said, Kyrie Irving, I think, is a long-time NBA player. Not that Derek Williams isn't, but you look at the league now, point guard play, the MVP, the current reigning MVP is a point guard, Derek Rose in Chicago, New Jersey. So you're the Cavs, you play in the Eastern Conference, there's some point guards you have to match up against. So Kyrie Irving, real athletic guy, can do a little bit of everything, works on both ends of the floor. He's going to be number one pick overall. I'll be shocked if he isn't. Now the rest of it really is kind of a crapshoot. It really is going to depend on what Minnesota does. Hard to tell what Minnesota is going to do. They don't need a point guard. They've got, you know, two or three decent point guards. They just signed Rubio a couple days ago, coming over from the EuroLeague that they drafted 2 years ago. They don't really need Derek Williams at small forward. You have Kevin Love, Michael Beasley. It's a logjam there at small forward and point guard. Derek Williams, is the best player available. I think they're going to take him. And the things that you hear about Minnesota working a trade or trading out of that pick are probably true. Who's going to fill that shoe or fill that void for them is trading out of that pick remains to be seen. There's a lot of suitors there. Then you have number three, you have the Utah Jazz. They seem to be enamored with the kid from Kentucky, the Brandon Knight kid. Real good player, good height, 6'3 for a point guard. Only played 1 year at Kentucky. Yeah, inconsistent scorer, but I think he's, can develop his jump shot. Defensively is going to be a big question for him. Then you look at number four. Again, a lot of people have the Cavs taken the Euro player, Enes Kanter, or one of the other Euro bigs. I say absolutely not. I wouldn't take one of the Euro bigs. And I was tweeting earlier before the show with probasketballdraft.com. And I asked them, they have access to some of the information I was looking at. I was like, what is the percentage of the Euro bigs drafted in the top 10 or 15? I gave them for the top 20. What are the percentage of these guys that actually pan out being big-time players? They got back to me, 15%. It's a very low return when you look at these Euro players. You don't get to see them a lot. You get to see them on film. Yeah, you get to see them do a couple workouts at your camp and in a isolated environment where they're definitely going to shine in that scenario. They're made to shine in that scenario with their agents and everything. But in the long haul, these guys take a long time to develop. 15% is not a good return on your investment at number four. So the Cavs really have two options. I think they should take Tristan Thompson at Texas. I think he fits. He's got an NBA body. He's NBA ready. He can rebound and play defense. That translates to the NBA. You can work on the rest later. It's the young team. Or you trade out of that pick and you go somewhere else, maybe Kawhi Leonard or somebody like that. Then you have the Toronto Raptors at number five. They're rumored to take Kemba Walker. I don't know how high they are on him at the point guard position at 6'1". But Kemba Walker was easily one of the best players when it came tournament time in the NCAA. So it'd be interesting to see if they pass on him or not. Again, Kawhi Leonard is rumored to go into the Kings. Some other players out there as well. Some other guys I think you keep a look at and you look at later in the first round with the New York Knicks. Kenneth Faried from Morehead State, I really like. Juwan Johnson, not getting a lot of talk, which is surprising to me considering the skill set that he has. And I tweeted earlier with some other people, said, don't be surprised if Juwan Johnson from Purdue ends up 3 to 5 years from now just being one of the top five players out of this draft. Don't be shocked by that. And there's good value in this draft. I don't know if there's necessarily all-stars in this draft, but there's good value and good productive players, guys who can play in the league for, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. Well, maybe not 20 years, but, 5, 10, 15 years. I think you definitely have guys that can fill a role coming off the bench, maybe be some starters. I don't know if you're going to get a lot of all-stars or superstars out of this draft, but there are quality basketball players out there. Keith Benson from Oakland is another person that comes to mind as well. But the Euro guys, again, 15% of the time they work out. That's a big risk. When you're a bad team already, you won 20, 30 games out of 82, you're already struggling to get wins. Can you really afford to draft a Euro player and have him play overseas for a year or two and hope that he's going to be a starter in the NBA? I don't think the Cavs are in a position to wait on a guy. I think they need a guy to come in and play right now. And that's why I think that Tristan Thompson from Texas, who's been moving up the draft board slowly and slowly at number four, maybe a little bit of a reach, but I think you take him, you bring him in, and you put him with J.J. Hickson, you put him with Baron Davis, and you put a young point guard behind Baron Davis and Kyrie Irving, you start to have something there. And then next year's draft looks to be very solid. But again, it remains to be seen how that's all going to pan out. Check it out Thursday night NBA draft. It's going to be very exciting. I think you're going to see a lot of activity. Like I said, the rumors are out there. If you want to know about them, you can go and you can check the rumors. They're all over the place. We're not going to get into a lot of them because there's just so many. And a lot of them, let's be honest, are just that. They're just rumors, just people trying to get a story out there because they have nothing to write about. Which, sure, that makes for good articles. But when it's all said and done, at the end of it all, you got to wait and see what happens. And that's why you got to watch the draft. If you're interested, you want to know what your team's going to do, you got to stay tuned in, get a hold of your local sports writers. I'm sure they can definitely, point you in the right direction. Maybe some of those rumors aren't rumors. Maybe there's some validity to them. Remains to be seen. Now, after the draft, we have the NBA lockout. We've mentioned it. We've kind of we've steered away from the elephant in the room week after week here on the show when we've talked NBA, and we've talked a lot of NBA on the show. Now, as it gets closer, that July 1st date is creeping up. It's creeping up. And all of a sudden, here it is. The owners, they're in talks. They had talks today. Now, the big thing with the owners right now is David Stern and his group have decided that they're going to let the owner or the players keep their guaranteed contracts as they're established now. That is a win. That is the NBA owner saying, you know what? The ratings haven't been good the last, you know, this is the best ratings we've had in a dozen years. Let's not mess this up. And now they're also, you know, they were really, really dead set on a hard salary cap. Now David Stern is saying, let's do flex cap. Let's do make it a $65 million salary cap and make it flex with the old luxury tax, similar to what they have now. And there's a lot of other things they have to discuss and work out as far as length of contracts, free agency, yada, 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 all those things go on and on and on. And what we'll do here on the show on Unsigned is we'll bring in Jeff Sack from NBA Overtime here in next week or the week after to really break that down for us, and we'll really get into that NBA labor talks. Hopefully they have a deal done and we don't have to talk about it. It's a done deal. They figure out how to make it happen by July 1st, and we don't have to worry about it. We have a season. We do training camp. They bring back the summer league, and everything's great. Speaking of lockouts, by the way, NFL, day 99, I think, 98, something like that. If the NBA has learned anything, they've watched the train wreck that is the NFL lockout, and it is ugly. They were supposed to meet today. Like, I guess they met today in Chicago. Still trying to figure out a way to split $9 billion. Yes, I said $9 billion with a B, dollars. Cha-ching. What a problem to have, right? I mean, they're making a boatload of money all over the place. The players, the owners are definitely making a boatload of money, and they can't figure out how to split $9 billion. It all comes down to revenue, just like in the NBA. It's going to be interesting to see with these talks. You know, if I think if they don't get something done this week, within the next week as we head into July, you know, when you're going to start seeing it's sweaty palms time when it comes to NFL labor talks. They're still in the court system. You're going to get more courts. You're going to get more lawyers. You're going to get more due dates for lawyers and in court, and less conversation between players and the NFL. And if that happens, and we talked about it months ago, what if there's not football? They wouldn't put this schedule out, and they made all these big marquee games for 9/11, the 10th anniversary of 9/11. That is going to make the NFL look real bad. If you can't find a way in this day and age to split up $9 billion with a B, $9 billion, 9/11 rolls around, you have all these marquee games set up for 9/11 for the second week of the season, you know, in New York, in Washington, in Philadelphia, all these big-time games. That's going to look real bad on the NFL if these games don't happen, one, because obviously you're still locked out. You don't have an agreement. And if it gets into, you know, August and September and you still don't have an agreement, we may not see football until midseason. We may be looking at an 8-game season next year. You may think I'm crazy, but that's very, very possible. Could happen. Don't be shocked if that happens. I hope it doesn't. I hope these guys find a way to split up $9 billion. Come on, guys. Let's divvy it up. Let's take the kids' gloves off here and let's split up our $9 billion. I'm taking my football and I'm going home. Unbelievable. My name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. Thanks for hanging out with me. It is Tuesday night. Hopefully everything's going all right with you. We're going to head to a section of the show we call Off the Path. I got a lot of things I want to cover tonight in Off the Path, and I'm going to lead off with the E Street Band, Clarence Clemens, saxophone player of the legendary E Street Band, dies at the age of 69. Clemens was known by friends and fans as the big man. Once the backbone of the E Street Band, he played on countless Springsteen songs, including Born to Run, Thunder Road, Jungle Land, Dancing in the Dark, Badlands, Promised Land. Bruce Springsteen said he always lifted me up, way, way up, together as a friend. And you know, that's what he said, you know, when they were inducted together in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame back in 1999. Now, the story is, you know, kind of a legend myth, one of those real, you know, stories we've always talked about on the show where, you know, you look at these, you know, these older musicians who have been around a little bit And, you know, they have these really amazing stories, you know, like the blues player a couple months ago who was in the knife fight. You know, he's in a knife fight. I guess he's going to play piano now. Can't play guitar anymore. Just, you know, really amazing stories. Now, here's an interesting story about Clarence Clemons. It was a story. It started off as a stormy night in Asbury Pike in 1971. Clemons met Springsteen at the time, who was basically just a struggling musician. Springsteen was, you know, struggling playing in the New Jersey bar circuit, and Clemons was a former college football player who spent his nights playing sax in clubs on the shore. And then all of a sudden, these guys, you know, met on this stormy night. Well, the storm was so bad it actually blew the doors off the building, according to the story. And people joke that it was actually Clemons' saxophone playing that blew the storm, it blew the door off, not the storm. Now, and it was basically history. It had been written at that point. These guys got together and never turned back. You're looking at 40, you know, 1971 till now. That's, you know, that's a long time to play music together. You know, 40 years of music, unbelievable. Now, Clemons grew up in Norfolk, Virginia, attended Maryland State College. He was a football star there. He also tried out for the Cleveland Browns in 1968. If it wasn't for an accelerator accident that jammed on his Buick Riviera, he may have had a career as a football player. But as it were, the crash that almost took his life made him go a different direction. You can actually read about that in his memoirs, the 2009 memoirs, Big Man, Real Life, Tall Tales. So, very interesting stuff. It always be missed. Clarence Clemons, saxophone player, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band, definitely lost a key component of really what made that band so great at that time in that era when the soulful mix, you know, had really been lost in music at that time. It was, you know, disco and, you know, the coming age of some of the more rock and roll, Kiss and those type of things. So they really, you know, grabbed the essence of the 1950s style and really brought that to the forefront. Clarence Clemons dead at the age of 69. From one tragedy, you know, loss to a extreme tragedy, Jackass superstar Ryan Dunn was driving and outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And according to police, Dunn's car was fully engulfed in flames when officials arrived on the scene. Now, earlier on Twitter, apparently Ryan Dunn had been, had posted pictures out drinking with his friends prior to the accident. Both Dunn and his passenger died as a result, sustained from the accident. Cops will release more information on the passenger once it becomes available. Cops say speed may have been a contributing factor to the accident. An investigation is ongoing. This was reported by TMZ. Now, for those of you out there who do not know Ryan Dunn and the Jackass series that was on MTV in the early 2000s and some of the Jackass movies that have been done in the last 10 years or so, he was, again, an American reality TV star personality and better known for really his daredevil attitude, best known for being a member of the show Jackass, of course, and also was a cast member on Viva La Bam. He also hosted shows Homewrecker and Proving Ground. Now, Dunn took part in Jackass the movie, better known for the golf cart incident where Bam said that it was just Dunn's bad driving, where he had took a golf cart and, you know, rode it up a ramp and was supposed to smash into this pig. Well, he shorted it and caused the golf cart to flip over and almost broke Johnny Knoxville's neck. Jackass. But I, you know, I was wondering, what is he going to be better known for, Ryan Dunn? Is it going to be for his bad driving and crazy antics of ramping things off, you know, ramping golf carts off ramps? Or is he going to be better known for, you know, his feature film where he stuck a Hot Wheels toy car up his rectum? Right? What do you think he'd be better known for? Hey, weren't you that guy that stuck a Hot Wheel in your ass in that movie back in 2002? Was that you? I thought that was you. I could tell by the x-ray. That was you. Jackass. Moving on here and off the path, two men in Devon, England. This was reported about a week or so ago. These two guys were planning to rob and murder British soul singer Josh Stone. The men were arrested for possessing offensive weaponry and carrying burglaring equipment near Stone's home in rural Collington. After neighbors reported a suspicious vehicle, according to The Sun, investigators found swords, rope, body bag, and detailed maps and aerial photos of Stone's estate upon searching the vehicle. Now, Josh Stone was a member of Mick Jagger's new supergroup, Super Heavy. She did not come in contact with the men, both men who traveled over 200 miles to Josh Stone's estate from Manchester. They are still being questioned by authorities on suspicion of conspiracy to rob and murder. Crazy stuff right there. You talk about, you look at, other tragedies that have happened to music, as far as singers go. I mean, to have, something that stopped is definitely a big deal. Josh Stone's a great singer. But obviously, you look at the mental stability of these two individuals is lacking. Moving on, my name is Ryan. This is Off the Path and Unsigned. Another story for you. Howard Stern writer Benji Bronk caused some chaos during the Anthony Weiner public farewell address when Anthony Weiner pulled out. After Bronk interrupted Weiner's speech with a barrage of questions, "Hey, are you 7 inches? Hey, will you remain your hot physique, smooth and sexy chest?" he asked. At that point, Bronk was escorted by police away from the hearing there for Anthony Weiner as he's yelling these things out. And if you listen to the video of Anthony Weiner in his farewell speech, as it were, you can hear Mr. Bronk yelling in the background these things. Rather funny. It actually turned into a serious scenario once he got outside, where someone came up to Bronk and actually threatened him, saying that he would never walk again. The man quickly disappeared after the threat, with left all reporters and even some of the police officers who were laughing of the incident. Got left them in shock once this person, was seen and heard doing this. Howard Stern on his radio show, then at that point, sent the tape to New York PD so they could actually find the culprit and make sure that nothing happened. Bronk was not there to cause any harm. He was there for comedy only. This individual obviously had some other intentions. Now, this is something you're going to find pretty interesting, and I thought it was very interesting as well. The band Metallica, one of the biggest thrash metal bands of all time, is actually working with Lou Reed to join forces on a new album. Kirk Hammett claims it doesn't feel like we're his backup band. It feels like we're a different band in a situation we've never been in before. And Rob Trujillo, the bass player, says it makes us a better band. Aldrich said the album is about 90% finished, but there are no release plans yet. Reed does not have a record label, and Metallica is no longer with Warner Brothers. "We are free to go wherever we want," Lars Aldrich says. Obviously psyched for people to hear this in whatever way we feel is right. Hetfield, on one condition, said, "I told Lou I want to be there when people hear it." He says, grinning, "I want to see their faces." So Metallica and Lou Reed are doing an album together. It's going to be very interesting. Again, no release date has been set. Once I find one, I'll definitely broadcast it here on Unsigned. Now, the last topic of the night here on Off the Path is the top movies at the box office. We do this every week, of course. We'll start from number 10. We'll work our way up to number 1. Number 10, Judy Moody and the Not Bummer Summer, coming in at number 10 at 2.1 million. Midnight in Paris, 4.8 million. Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, 6.6 million. Bridesmaids, again, still sticking in there at number 7 with $7 million. Kung Fu Panda 2, animated film with Jack Black, 9 million. The Hangover Part 2, 10 million. X-Men First Class, 11.9 million. Mr. Popper's Penguins, Jim Carrey film, 18.4 million. The movie Super 8, which I absolutely love and is getting really good reviews now as well. Again, that's going to be the unsigned movie to go see, in my opinion. I give it the unsigned clap, 21.4 million. And The Green Lantern, also available in 3D, 53.1 million opening weekend. Very nice. I'd like to see Green Lantern. Didn't get a chance to this weekend. Hopefully I'll catch it and we can do a review here on the show for you next week. That concludes our section of Off the Path here on Unsigned. My name is Ryan, and we're going to get right back into the sports section of the show. And I want to start off by talking about the highest paid players and athletes in 2011. Number one, Tiger Woods, no surprise there, I don't believe, made $75 million and has a net worth of over $500 million. Number two, Kobe Bryant, $53 million, has a net worth of over $150 million. I believe that's probably more than that, but made $53 million last year with endorsements and playing. Number three on the list is the self-proclaimed king, LeBron James, made $48 million. Net worth is not listed. Number four, tennis player Roger Federer, made $47 million. Phil Mickelson, golfer, $46.5 million. No football players in the top ten. Be noted, number six, David Beckham, made $40 million and has a net worth of over $219 million. Other notables on the list, Tom Brady, number 13, who made $31 million last year. Also, Peyton Manning is on the list. Derek Jeter and A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez from the New York Yankees, also on the list. A lot of NBA players on this top 25. I would say probably between 10 to 15 of the top 25 most paid athletes are NBA players. And that really swings me back around to the NBA lockout and how these players really, are really getting a good deal by the NBA compared to other sports, and how they could possibly think of locking out is beyond me. But you'll notice on this list here, and I brought this up to our producer and founder of Omnis TV, Mike. You look at this list, you look at the top five. Phil Mickelson, champion. Roger Federer, champion. Kobe Bryant, champion. Tiger Woods, champion. One doesn't fit there. LeBron James, $48 million. He's the only one in the top five, doesn't have a championship. I figure that's worth noting. Now, I broke this down for you as far as lowest paying sport is women's bowling. The highest paying sports are actually baseball and boxing collectively. Gender breakdown are 32 men's sports, 11 women's sports professionally. Total money earned is ridiculous. The average amount earned per athlete with all these sports figured, baseball, boxing, bowling, the list goes on and on and on. The average amount earned per athlete with all the sports professionally is $5.5 million a year for the average professional athlete. I don't know about you. That's pretty good money. I'll take that. And you have guys in the NFL, you have guys in the NBA and other sports are saying that's not quite enough. It's not quite enough. Really? Not quite enough, huh? Average of $5.5 million a year is not quite enough. And you have people in this country who are struggling to just, keep their light bill on, So, and not all athletes, are that oblivious. There are, for all the stories of athletes hearing doing stupid things, there are just as many athletes out there doing wonderful things for their community as well. So don't get me wrong here. They're well paid. It's very hard work to keep your body mentally and physically up to play professional sports, whatever it may be, whether it's boxing, baseball, basketball, football, tennis, the list goes on. And there are athletes out there who do give back, and I applaud them. I think it's great that, they set up charities. A good example would be Dwight Howard, the Orlando Magic, who's really starting to transcend basketball. This guy's going overseas. He's doing things for tornado relief in Alabama and Missouri and all these places, setting up these funds, doing community service out of his own pocket, out of his own time and effort. It's guys like that that make you go, I'm glad that guy makes as much money as he does because he's doing the right thing with it. That being said, we'll move on. Major League Baseball recap. A lot going on in Major League Baseball. They've pretty much taken over the summer now that, once the NBA draft is over and that lockout happens, and with the NFL, the mess that it is, baseball really taking the forefront here. We look at the AL East. The Boston Red Sox and the Yankees, it's going to come down to the wire. Both of these teams are 8-2 of their last 10. Boston has played some really solid baseball lately. They have a game and a half lead over the New York Yankees right now. Now you look at the AL Central. The Indians clinging clinging to a one-game lead over the Detroit Tigers. And the Tigers didn't do themselves any luck by getting shut out the other day by the by the Dodgers in interleague play. I know one of Darryl Ryder's favorites, of course. Indians are 5-5 out of their last 10, and so on to the Detroit Tigers. So the Indians still keeping ground, still playing over 500 baseball here, clinging to the one-game lead. Be interesting to see, you know, once we head into July, what the Indians can do. If they can, you know, they just fired their batting coach, got a new batting coach in here. So hopefully things turn around and the Tribe finds their swing again. They get back into, the amazing baseball we saw in May and April. Now you look at the AL West. The Texas Rangers are the class of this division. But again, credit former skipper Eric Wedge and the Seattle Mariners for being right there, only one game back from the Texas Rangers playing over 500 baseball. Credit goes out to that Mariners staff and Eric Wedge. The Rangers, I expect with Cruz and Hamilton to win that division when it comes winning time. Heading into the National League, again, no shocker here. This is like on repeat. Philadelphia Phillies widening their gap now against the Atlanta Braves. And the New York Mets, not in last place. Woo-hoo! Go Mets. Not in last place, baby. But the Philadelphia Phillies really find their swing. Cliff Lee, Holiday, and those guys win 8 of their last 10 again. Playing solid baseball. Look for them to end up with the best record in Major League Baseball when it's all said and done. Now, you look at the NL Central. The St. Louis Cardinals, I think, may be in trouble. They've lost, you know, 7 out of their last 10. Albert Pujols, real nasty broken wrist on his left hand in a bang-bang play on first base is going to be out between 4 to 6 weeks. That is huge for St. Louis, considering he was just really starting to heat up and really swing the bat like we've come to know from Albert Pujols. So hopefully he has a speedy recovery. It's only 4 weeks and not six. But the Cardinals only have a half-game lead over the Milwaukee Brewers. And the Cincinnati Reds, even though they haven't necessarily played well, are only 2.5 games out. And you got to think that with the Cardinals having Albert Pujols out of the lineup, they're going to struggle scoring runs. It remains to be seen. But you lose a player of that caliber, it's going to be tough, you know, to keep pace in my eyes. Now you look at the West, the NL West. The Giants, again, last year's champions, they lost 6 of their last 10, but they find a way with a half-game lead over the Arizona Diamondbacks to get that first-place spot despite some of the injuries they've had. Now, the Indians and the Giants are going to be facing an interleague play here very soon. Be interesting to see how that's going to pan out as the weekend comes. The Colorado Rockies are right there. They've had a lot of injuries on that team, but they're right there. They're about 3 games out of first place, so you know, within striking distance. We're heading into the late June, going into July, a lot of baseball to be played, you know, as we head into the halfway point. Now, looking at the U.S. Open, we don't do a whole lot of golf on the show, but I figure it's worth mentioning. Rory McIlroy won the 2011 U.S. Open by 8 shots, really running away with it. Now, you look at it, you know, a young player like him coming in and winning. There's no Tiger Woods. The ratings were down. All of a sudden, people caught wind of this kid and like, wow, this kid is running away with the U.S. Open. And now the conversation has come is, when does Tiger come back? Does this fuel Tiger Woods to be the Tiger Woods that we've known for the last 10 years, the dominant golfer? The guy who comes out there and he's like, yeah, I'm the best golfer there out here. I don't care who you are, what you do, what you say. I'm Tiger Woods. I'm going to win this thing. Now you have this kid, Rory McIlroy, who's, you know, he had the collapse about a year or so ago on the PGA Tour. You know, everyone thought, oh man, you know, he had a big lead and then the collapse. And then all of a sudden for him to come out and win like this caught everybody's attention in golf, including some of the veterans, Phil Mickelson and others. So it'll be interesting to see once Tiger comes back, you know, does this light a fire under Tiger Woods? I hope it is. I mean, like I said, we don't cover a lot of golf on the show, but you know, when you look at golf, I mean, it makes it exciting to have guys of this caliber who are just unbelievable at what they do. I mean, there's a lot of good golfers out there, don't get me wrong, but it's good for the sport. And I think, you know, you get Tiger Woods coming off the knee injury. He's getting up there as far as, you know, golfing, you know, age is concerned. A lot of golfers don't win a lot of tournaments and PGA tours in their mid to late 30s. So he's getting, the window is closing for Tiger, where this McIlroy kid is in his early 20s, got a lot of good golf ahead of him. But does this fuel Tiger Woods like it would fuel Kobe Bryant in the NBA? Hey, I still got it. I'm going to go try to win one or two more. Interesting to see how that's going to unfold as we move along in the PGA Tour. It looks like McIlroy is going to take about 3 weeks off, though, after his win. Soak it in. Enjoy it. Good for him. Congratulations. Winning the U.S. Open by 8 shots. Whew. If I went and played out there, I'd be about 18 shots over. That's after a couple mulligans and, you know, who knows what else I did to get 18 over. I'd take on Charles Barkley, though. I would. I'd take Charles Barkley on in golf because he's terrible. You seen his golf swing? It's terrible. My name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. That's about all I got for you tonight. Hopefully you enjoyed the show as much as I have. We covered a lot of ground, you know, NBA, Major League Baseball, lots of, you know, entertainment news as far as, you know, Ryan Dunn, so on and so forth. So I want to give a big shout out to at Cooker Carolyn, as we do every week here on the show. Catch her at Cooker Carolyn on Twitter. And check out her cookbook as well. Very good stuff. Over 45 recipes, including, you know, her fried chicken, spicy macaroni and cheese, you know, the Caribbean jerk sauce, which I have had on the wings. It's delicious, especially if you're grilling out. Summer is officially here. It's the first day of summer. You might as well get, you know, you need some recipes for grilling out, cooking out. This cookbook's got the thing for you. And you need something for a dessert or a party you're going to this summer, this cookbook also has that. So check it out at Cooker Carolyn on Twitter for information on how you can order that. Get with her, and she can definitely help you out with that. My name is Ryan. Hey, I want to thank everybody out there for listening. I want to thank Mike, producer, engineer, and also founder of OMNES.TV. Once again, thank you very much, Mike. Good job as always. My name is Ryan. This has been Unsigned. It seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, everybody do so. Take care.